Monday! Open wide dev fans! Get ready to stuff your face with JavaScript, CSS, Node Modules, barbecue tips, Git workflows, breakdancing, soft skills, web development, the hastiest, the craziest, the tastiest web development treats. Coming in hot, here is Wes, Barracuda, Boss, and Scott, El Toro Loco, Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntex on this Monday hasty treat. We're going to be talking all about changes and updates to JavaScript new in 2022. New coming and proposed features. A lot of interesting stuff and a lot of interesting proposals as always. And my name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a developer from Denver, Colorado. And with me as always is the Wes Boss.
Hey, this is another fun one to talk about. New coming and proposed features to JavaScript. I always love talking about what could happen, when these are useful. I don't know about you, but this stuff is exciting to me.
Super exciting to me. I think it's kind of evident by both of our career choices and choosing to be no on the latest stuff here. We love it. So yeah, this episode is sponsored by two amazing companies, Magic Bell and Sentry. Wes, do you want to talk about Magic Bell and I'll hit Sentry?
I do. What the heck is Magic Bell, you ask? Magic Bell is a notification inbox for your product. So let's say you've got a SaaS app or something like that. You need to be able to notify your users of somebody gets followed, something is shipped, literally any notification inside of your application. You think, okay, like that makes sense. I could just have an array of notifications and push that into the array and bing, bong, boom, you're done. Not that easy, right? Like what if they want an email and in the app, but not a push notification on their phone? Or what if they saw it on the app? Do you still email them about it? Because that's kind of annoying, right? And then what if somebody wants to filter out only certain types of notifications? Like, wow, that starts to get really, really complicated. So Magic Bell is something you integrate into your application that will allow you to have full control over your notifications in your application. It is really, really cool. They've got a really good API. They have full support of it. They're rolling out new stuff all the time. Check it out at magicbell.com, wicked domain. You get a free 100 MAUs, which is monthly active users. And if you use the coupon code SYNTAXFM, you get 10% off for the first 12 months. Thank you for sponsoring Magic Bell.
Sick. This episode is also sponsored by Sentry at sentry.io. Sentry is the perfect place to see all of your errors and exceptions happen. Not only that, but monitor the performance of your application and just make sure everything is running smoothly. I like to think about Sentry as being like a super cool warning light in my car that's like, there's 500 issues.
Imagine my wife was telling me that some people call them dash emojis.
Oh, that is weird. That is funny. I've never heard of that at all. That's super funny. Sentry at sentry.io is a really great place to keep track of all of that stuff. You know me, I like to make sure that all of my things are running smoothly and that I don't have any issues. So I use Sentry and I have it alert me. I have it send me an email on regressions, but I also have the Sentry performance metrics tools tracking set up so that I could see that when I just sent out my latest release that I was able to really squash user misery quite a bit because we had reduced the loading speed of, or I would say we increase the loading speed, but we reduce the loading capacity of some of our pages, making everything run smoother. We added better caching, and Sentry was there for me to see that it actually made a difference with real users on the front end of our site. So if you want to give Sentry a try, head on over to sentry.io, use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, and you'll get 2 months for free. Thank you so much for Sentry for sponsoring. All righty then. Did you see? Ooh, a little Ace Ventura, a little accidental Ace Ventura to kick off the.
It's funny that sometimes like those slip in. Like the other day, I was like to my wife, "I love gold." And I was like, I haven't done. Oh my god! What's the Napoleon Dynamite?
Tina. Yeah, I say I love gold so much to my wife, and I didn't even like that movie. I like the first two were great or whatever. The third one, I don't, not so much. But I say I love gold so much for no reason. And I'm like always, every single time she just gives me a look like, what are you doing, man? What is going on here?
I'm pretty sure that was like, VHS old, isn't it?
Yeah,
maybe it has to. Maybe it's DVD.
I know definitively that we at least had the first Austin Powers on VHS.
Oh man. All right. Well, let's get on into it. You want to grab the first one there? Yeah. You're the one that told me about this.
Yeah. So one of the neat things coming to Node.js specifically is something that we've been really dying for a long time. And that is fetch, as in, yes, the fetch that we're used to having inside of the browser is going to be ported into Node. And it says it's coming. See, I didn't know this because I saw Mateo say it was coming in Node 18. But Wes, it seems like you've done some digging to find that it's actually coming in Node 17. And the reason is because the even ones are long term releases. Is that that's the way they say that? What are those?
Yeah. So for some reason, I thought I saw that it was being released in Node 17. Maybe you're right about Node 18, but I did see that is being backported to Node 16, which is really exciting because Node.js uses long-term LTS, and that's generally the long-term support. That's the version of Node that you use if you're running any sort of like big production. I often will go newer and hit issues and whatever, but generally if you want to keep it nice and safe and you know that there it is going to be supported for security, you use whatever Node.js is supporting as LTS, long-term support. And those are all the even numbers. So 16 will come out with LTS, 17 will get a whole bunch of new features, and then 18 will come out and that will be in the next version of LTS, which is really exciting. So it looks like it's still under a flag. But those things usually don't stick around for too long in under flags world, and we'll be able to use it
under flags world. That sounds like a
flags world. Yeah. Meaning that like when you run Node, you have to use --- experimental --fetch. And then eventually that will just be turned off and you can just go ahead and use it, which is pretty exciting. One thing I did see about it is that it is going to be a global API, meaning that you can just write fetch. And yeah, it will work the same way you can just write console log in your code and you don't have to import it from anywhere. So yeah, it's great. It's really, really smooth. It's probably going to be a while before you are able to just go ahead and do that. But I imagine the isomorphic fetch will check for the existence of the built-in. I called it native on Twitter and I had a whole bunch of people freak out on me. It's not native, apparently. Apparently, it's written in JavaScript, and native would imply that it was written in C++.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I saw some people being like, why do I need this? We already have isomorphic fetch, or we already have node fetch. Why do I need this? Wes, what would you say to those people?
I don't want to have to import it, or I don't want to have to
install it or
NPM
keep it up.
Install it. It's such it a basic thing that you have to do for every single project. It's the same thing with jQuery. Like years ago, before you wanted to do anything with the DOM, you had to throw jQuery in there. And that's a pain for having to get up and running quickly, but it's also a pain for just another dependency that we now have to install and manage and update and things like that. And that is a very basic thing in software development, is making a request to a server and getting the response back. And that is something that's in the browser. That is something that is in Dino. And it's now something that we can have in Node.js world.
Yeah, it's gonna ease that like browser to Node, you know, problems that people can have, especially when they're first starting out. Oh, why? I don't really understand why fetch is here and it's not here. I thought fetch was part of JavaScript. Oh, it's not part of JavaScript. It's part of the browser. You know, all of that confusion between what's the browser and what's Node can be eased just a little bit.
Yeah, it's a web API, which is governed by the WG?
The WHATWG.
The WHATWG. And the JavaScript itself is governed by ECMA. And then Node's APIs is governed by the Node.js committee, which is kind of bizarre, right? So it's like, it's not just JavaScript. We have the fundamental language, and then we have APIs that are specific to platforms. Node.js, Dino, or web workers is another one, and of course in the browser. All right. Next one we have here is URL imports in Node.js. This is something that should be landing in Node 18. And what that means is that you'll be able to import modules and import functions and data from a HTTPS URL directly. So instead of having to NPM install it, you can simply just import it. That is part of the ECMAScript module spec. And it just has not been in Node.js yet. There's some security concerns around that being an issue, because if everybody's importing something from a URL, that value can change. Mm-hmm. And there's stuff around that. Like right now, like let's say you go to a website and you download a DMG file and install that. Generally, those will have a hash on them. And if the hash of that software bundle changes, or even with JavaScript, if you do script source equals bundle.js, you'll often see a hash in that. And if the bundle changes before the HTML updates, the browser will reject it because it could potentially have been injected with some malicious code. So that's kind of what they're still trying to figure out how to do it. But that's really exciting because, again, that's you don't have to NPM install. You don't need to have a package JSON for these things. As someone who writes a lot of quick scripts, I really like the idea of just being, I don't think it will totally replace it. Like I'm not particularly fond of the way Dino does it. I don't mind NPM installing something and having a nice list of all the versions that I have, but it will be nice to just go up and grab something straight from a URL.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how much I'll love it or use it or any of that stuff, but again, yeah, at least nice to have that as an option. Next one is going to be JSON modules. Now, JSON modules, this one's been coming down the pipeline for a little bit. I think we've probably mentioned it before, but you might not know this, but many times when you're importing JSON in your current applications, it's not JavaScript or ESM that's doing the importing. It's Webpack, your bundler, whatever, loading that thing up, transforming it, turning it into JavaScript, anything that you can to be able to read it. But we're going to have the ability to import JSON straight up. And the syntax for that, it says import thing from your .json file, but then you need a assert and then an object that says type of JSON in a string. And what this is doing is telling your code essentially that this thing I'm importing should be asserted to be JSON. And this kind of opens the door for a lot of interesting different types of imports, I think. Is this the first thing that we're able to assert in imports? I think it might be, Wes, right?
Yeah. I remember I feel like we talked about as text being a thing as well. This was back when we did in the summer, we did another one of these shows where we talked about what's coming. And there was this proposal for assertions in imports. And one of those was in order to do JSON modules. Mm-hmm. And then there was another example of being able to import text, which is kind of interesting as well.
Speaking of which, Vite actually has that. To import something as text, I believe it's just like you do like raw or something in the import.
Oh yeah,
and I actually find myself using that way more than I expected to. I have no idea. Like I was importing a markdown file, and instead of doing like a a special import to import markdown files, I just imported it as raw text and then passed it through marked. I was like, wait, this is easy. I didn't have to have any special importer for that.
Yeah, and like if you've done that in the past, you probably have to use like a fs.read file. You have to wait it, and it'd be kind of cool. It's kind of neat that you can like sort of like try it out in these Webpack v whatever world, and then if it's like, oh, this is actually really handy, or like people get so used to using it inside of their framework, and then they go back to straight up Node or just straight up JavaScript, be like, oh, that's not actually something you can do. You can import. A big use case for this is reading the values of the package.json inside of your Node script. If you want to get the name or the description or the author or anything that's in the package.json. And we've been able to do this with common JS require for the longest time. And it would just check if there's a JSON file with that name. And I've used that quite a bit. But even if I have JSON, I just make it a .js file because the pain in the ass at writing, like writing straight up JSON, double quotes, no trailing comma, all that big pain in the butt stuff. Mm. Pain in the butt. Next
pain
one we have
in
here.
The butt stuff.
Next one we have here is, this is just kind of a little interesting thing, is adding node colon in your import URL scheme in Node.js. So you know how Node has all these built-ins, path, URL, FS, crypto. They have all of these built-in libraries in Node, and you just import it from path, URL, crypto, FS. Yeah, and like for a while, there was like a package called crypto, and then Node got crypto built in, right? And every time I see myself using crypto, I'm like, is that the package or is that the built-in thing, you know? And so now they have introduced this idea of writing node colon path URL cool. FS crypto. And then you know, just by glancing at it, that's a built-in because it's prefixed with node colon. Doesn't change any features. It just simply is a way for you to see what's going on. And I think the idea there is that if there's ever overwrites in naming or collisions, or you have a local file, because of the way Node looks up files, if you have like a local file of the same name, I think it goes to that one first. This will sort of alleviate any of those potential edge case issues. And then also seems like JavaScript is proposing this as well. So you'd be able to do import. Let's use temporal. What's one of the temporal API methods?
Instant.
Yeah. So you import instant from temporal or JS colon temporal. So right now this doesn't exist in JavaScript land. Every time we get a new API, date, console, temporal, intl, they're just global things that are just available to us. But the sort of the idea is that as the standard lib in JavaScript expands, you can't just keep stuffing stuff into the global namespace and say, hey, it's there if you need it, because it gets very, very large. So the idea is that the browser and the language will ship APIs, but they're not included until you go ahead and explicitly import those values, just like it is in Node.js land. So that's pretty cool that I think that's why they sort of thought about this, and now both Node and JavaScript are adopting it.
Cool. Well, okay, let's get into the next one here, which is going to be the pipeline operator. Now, the pipeline operator, I think, can confuse some people. Maybe they say, like, what's the point? What is this thing doing for me? But I think Wes had a really nice little message here, a little explanation as to why this thing is so interesting. Because specifically, let's say you want to perform some sort of operation. You're doing like math.max on two numbers. Then you run them through another function that's like calculate something, right? Calculate bill is what you have.
Calculate bill.
Yeah, calculate bill. And you're talking about like the type of bill you get at a restaurant, not like a person named Bill. And then you might want to like do something like console log it or do something else with that. Now, that's all well and fine. You can do that, no problem. But if you visualize that, what you end up doing is starting in the middle and working your way out, right? The very first thing you do ends up being the thing in the middle. Then you have a wrapper, then a wrapper, then a wrapper. And it's kind of confusing that the thing you're actually doing first isn't the first thing listed, right? You have bed mass listed here. What does bed mass mean?
Brackets, exponents, multiplication, brackets. Let me start again. Brackets, exponents, division, multiplication, addition, subtraction, and what's the extra S?
I don't know. Is this like math thing? Is this
math
thing?
Yeah. Did you not grow up learning bed mass?
No, I'd never heard the word bed mass. We call it the order of operations.
Yeah. There's no double S. For some reason, I thought there was two S's on the end of bed mass. So like bed mass is how math works. You do your brackets first, and then you do your exponents, and then you do your division, then your multiplication, then your addition, and your subtraction. And JavaScript works very much the same way in that you have to do the stuff in the brackets first, right? And if you have something that is strung together three or four times, you have to sort of start, you figure out, okay, well, it's doing this first and then passing it to that. And the other thing is there, you could just do new variables on every single line, right? And that's kind of a pain as well. So this pipeline operator will allow you just to hot potato math.max, and then you you pass that number into the next function, calculate bill, that runs it and returns an action. Like, you know how nice chaining your arrays is?
Yeah.
Imagine you could
chaining your functions. Yeah.
Yeah. Just I always just call it hot potato. Throw the data from one function to another.
So it's not chaining your functions, it's hot potatoing.
It's hot potatoing, yes.
Yeah.
That's the that's what the literature says.
That's what the literature says, yes. And it's called the pipeline operator because it is a literal like pipe, the character pipe that's the vertical character that's above your backslash, that's above your return. It's the pipe character and then a caret. That's the way that this will be denoted to say, hey, this is this thing, pipe, caret, the next function, pipe, caret, the next function, pipe, caret, the next function. Now, I would be remiss if I did not mention that there's two sort of competing ways that people are kind of arguing on Twitter about this and arguing in the various spaces, the F-sharp pipes as well as the hack pipes. Now, hack is a language and F-sharp is a language, and they both do pipes slightly different. Now, I personally don't know too much about this argument. I don't want to misrepresent it. So head on over to the pipeline operator. Read me here if you want to read a little bit about what the difference between those two proposals are and what the pros and cons are, because I know that it's quite an in-depth conversation there.
Next one we have here, this is very underwhelming, but it is in a proposal right now, which is reversible string split. So apparently, I didn't even know this. When you use a split function in Perl, Java, PHP, Ruby, Python, Go, and Rust, you can pass a second argument to that split, and it will tell you how many of the items you actually want. So, and JavaScript does this as well. So you've got Wes, Cool, Boss, and you want to split that string on space and to get an array of three things, Wes, Cool, Boss, right? But if you only wanted the first two things, the second argument to split is how many do you want? It's two. And then that will just give you Wes, Cool. And JavaScript differs from literally every other language in that the remaining items are lost to space, whereas every other language will return to you an array of, oh, here, you know what? Like, I got you the items you want, but here also is the rest of the things that you didn't want. And that can be really handy for if you're like, all right, I just want the first two things, but then the rest, even though there's commas in them or whatever, I just want that as a string. So the idea here is that you would have a new method called split n, and it would just give you the remainder of the elements when you split them.
Interesting. Is that something that you plan on using?
I could see it being interesting because like that's how like the rest param when you're destructuring works.
Yeah.
You know, like you're like, give me the first two things and then totally. The rest, dot, 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 right? And and that kind of makes sense to do that. And also people coming from literally any language, other language, would find themselves needing that as well. So I could see it coming up like three or four times. That's one of those just like minor things like, oh, that's nice to have now.
I do often find myself like trying things that worked in Python and being like, oh yeah, this doesn't work in JavaScript. Oops.
Yeah,
I forgot.
And also like maybe not me because I work in like pure database and whatever, but a lot of times people are working with just like strings and they're getting data from I don't know. They're getting data from like some sort of data set and they need to split it themselves. There's like a certain type of developer that has to do a lot of data processing before they go ahead and do it. And I think this would be very helpful to them.
Word. Okay. So next one here is going to be JavaScript module blocks. I don't know too much about this, Wes. Do you know very much about JavaScript module blocks?
I was reading the proposal. And I don't entirely get it. The idea is that you can make a block, which is a curly brackets, and inside of that, you can export multiple values. And apparently the use case for this is if people are importing values into web workers or into CSS Houdini Paint API, there is a lot of limitations around importing code from another URL. And this kind of comes back to the, we were talking about importing stuff from a separate URL and Node.js as well. And apparently there's some cores issues. So being able to have a file that imports the API from an external package and then immediately turns around and exports it is there. So I don't totally get this. So I added this one in there just because it is new, but I would love to see an example from somebody. There's obviously examples in the proposal, but if anyone on Twitter at SyntaxFM has a better example of what they would want this for, let us know.
Yeah, it's interesting. But I don't know when and where which I would use this. Yeah.
Last one we have here, and this is probably my favoritely named one, is string.cooked.
Ooh.
So we have tag template literals in JavaScript, which is when you use a backticks, you can tag them with, like, you can tag them with GraphQL or styled component or literally anything. And it's kind of like a function. And if you want the returned value from that function, you have to make a function that returns the tag template literal. And string.cooked is sort of the opposite of string.raw, where it will give you the parsed value of your template literal without having to create a whole entire function. So it's just a shorthand syntactic sugar on top of a function returning a tag template literal value. I really like the name of that one, so I threw it in there.
That is interesting. Yeah. Again, I don't know if I'll use this one, but I might just so I can type string.cooked. That's pretty great. I love that it's the opposite of string.raw. That's very funny and also makes a lot of sense.
I believe that is it. There's one more here for big int math.
Big a proposal. Int.
Big yeah. int. So I don't deal with big enough numbers for this to matter for me, but there is a proposal to add a whole bunch of mathematical functions around big ints, which is not just regular. We always say JavaScript doesn't have different types of numbers, and that's always kind of a lie because there is this thing called the big int.
Which is newish in its own, yeah.
Yeah, and if you need to do math, you want to find the min or the max of big ints, you can.
Yeah, so those of you who are out there doing big ints, big math. These could be interesting to you. Again, I don't work
with Shout out to all my big int friends.
Shout out to all my big int friends doing big math out there. We see you. We hear you. you're working with big... Dang, how'd those numbers get so big? Yeah, that's what they're saying. Now we can now we can work with them with some big int methods.
All right. I think that is it. Anything else to add or should we wrap it up?
No, wrap it up. I'm, you know what? Out of all of these, I'm most excited for fetch in Node, even though it's functionally not going to change my life that much. And the pipeline. Which one's Wes? Which one sparkle the most to you? Which ones are you staring at and saying like, ooh, baby?
Yeah, I am probably most excited for fetch as well. Pipeline operator is going to be, they've been talking about this forever. I'm really excited about that as well. The rest of these are just like, ha, that's nice. I need to know about that. I put that in my back pocket, but it's not something like, oh my gosh, importing JSON in an ECMAScript file. Oh, that's amazing. Like what a relief, you know? Oh,
yes.
But it's stuff that needs to get done as well.
Dope.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you on Monday.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.